Are you feeling anxious? How can Jesus lead us out of feelings of anxiety? Hello and welcome to the God Story Podcast. I'm Brent Siddle, and a very special guest with me on the show this time is author Alan Fadling, who's with me to talk about his new book from InterVarsity Press, IVP America, which is called The Non-Anxious Life, Experiencing the Peace of God's Presence. Now, Alan is president and founder of Unhurried Living in Mission Viejo, California, inspiring people to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better. He speaks and consults internationally. He's the author of a number of books, including An Unhurried Life, which was honored with a Christianity Today Award of Merit in Spirituality. And Alan joins me now on Zoom from the States. Alan, hi to you.
Hello to you. Thanks for the invitation.
Are you feeling anxious about this interview? I'm a little bit anxious, in a good way.
I often feel anxious about a speaking event. I just got off the radio, live radio interview a little bit ago. That made me feel rather anxious.
Yes, they do. I mean, I don't know. I'm 32 years in broadcasting. I still get nervous before a show. Anyway, I've got a whole question, a series of questions about performance anxiety, which I want to ask you, because you speak internationally, and therefore, you will no doubt encounter lots of anxiety. And indeed, you open the book by writing, "For most of my adult life, I've been a master of anxiety." Now, why is that? Why have you been a master of anxiety for most of your life?
Yeah, well, I think the simplest answer to that is I practiced a lot. My habits of worry in childhood, in my youth, in my young adulthood and on, I'm in my 60s now, I realize I've had a lot of practice worrying. I even joke in the book that my worry is a kind of practicing the absence of God. And I don't think it's that practice has done me a lot of good.
Yeah. In what ways has anxiety affected you throughout your life? I mean, you write about a lot of episodes in the book, don't you?
I do. Well, so sometimes anxiety has had a way of paralyzing me, you know, just so overwhelming. I just didn't know what to do. And I would just get stuck. Often I needed some very practical and, in fact, professional help to make my way forward from places like that. At other times, my anxiety has driven me. Just do something else. Do something more. When I proposed this book to my publisher, I said to them that the more I talk with Christian leaders about worry, the more I realize it sounds a lot like anxiety. And that actually is very familiar for me as well.
Yeah, how did the anxiety manifest itself? Do you still have a physical reaction to it or with it?
Absolutely, yeah. So sometimes it comes in the form of a racing mind. I've just got my mind is a container full of flies just buzzing around, and I can't even count them. They just feel overwhelming. Sometimes it has a physical side to it. My shoulders being tight, the butterflies in the stomach, the tightness of my chest. There'll be a physicality to it. And often it's just the emotional sense of threat. Oh, no, something bad is about to happen. Or, yes. Oh, no, maybe God's wrong. Maybe, though he's my shepherd, maybe I shall find myself in want. And so those are the messages and feelings of anxiety that I experience.
Mm. We seem to live in an anxious age, don't we? I mean, you write about this in the book. Why are we all seemingly so anxious these days, so uptight and so worried about everything?
I'm sure we all have our reasons. I would say in my part of the world and in our experience, I think the COVID dynamic, the pandemic, exposed some things that were already there and maybe also accelerated them and maybe also amplified them. And so, in our part of the world, the amount of political turmoil and conflict, the amount of cultural conflict, and then therefore the amount of personal anxiety has been on the rise, especially in these last few years. I think people feel out of control. I think people feel endangered. I think people imagine that they're missing out on something that they desperately need. And all of those will provoke anxiety for us.
Yes, I think in New Zealand it was being locked down and people being confined to their houses for weeks at a time and really only able to go to the local park to exercise once a day if they were lucky, and not even able to go and visit their friends or relatives. Very, very stressful. We all got very anxious, I can tell you.
Yes.
What are some of the ways that we can learn to be – I don't know whether we can be – can we be ever be free of anxiety? What are some of the ways we can learn to reduce our anxiety levels?
Well, I think – when I say somewhere in the book that I set out to write a book about, you know, finding the place of never feeling anxious again, and I have not found that plateau. I have not discovered that land. So I still feel physical and emotional and mental realities of anxiety. When I talk about a non-anxious life, what I'm saying is you can have those feelings and those not be the only thing true about you. Someone has said that anxiety and other emotions are kind of like the weather. You're more like the mountain. You have a more solid place to be. You, as a follower of Jesus, I have a home, a safe home, a secure home, a solid home. And it's not that the realities or the dynamics of anxiety aren't real, just that there is someone and something even more real.
Mm-hmm. I wonder whether there are actually some good aspects of anxiety or things that we can put to positive use.
Yeah. Well, so I think on that front, it helps me to realize, for example, in the New Testament, the same word sometimes translated worry can be simply translated care. Paul talks about his care for the churches, and I don't think he means frantically worrying, but having deep concerns. So I've often said that anxiety is sort of what care looks like in my life when God's care isn't bigger in the picture, like when I'm just left with my own cares. So I like to think that my anxiety tells me what matters to me and what I care about. Now, what I'll do about that is another question. And putting my cares in the context of God's greater care has been one way to sort of downsize my anxiety.
How do you go about doing that, may I ask?
Yeah, there are a few ways. Sometimes in the midst of an anxious moment, something has crossed my path. Something has happened. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good. I'm worried. And anxiety is now playing the role of prophet, and it's predicting the future, and it is a gloomy one. It is a doomsday scenario. The only thing is anxiety has been wrong so often. And so why I keep listening to it is another question altogether. But what I'll do sometimes is just that wonderful and simple line in that familiar psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Sometimes in the moment, I will remember that. I'll try to feel that in my physical body. I will try to allow that to fill my thinking right alongside the buzz of anxious thoughts. And I will seek to let that settle into my emotion. And with practice, that has begun to help. And so I found myself one time, just a quick story. I'm in the airport. This is before COVID. And so I'm in the airport preparing to travel over to India. And I am 20 minutes from boarding, and I realize I have no wallet. It'll be very challenging to pay for anything on this 2-week trip with no wallet. Now, my immediate response was, of course, anxiety. Oh, no.
I don't blame you.
I'm up a creek. What am I going to do? I mean, I have my ticket. Okay. But I have no way to pay for anything. And I'm going to a part of the world where they're not going to pay for me. Anyways, all that to say, in that moment, I could feel anxiety wash over me. But I'd been practicing this little, "Lord is my shepherd." One of the ways I would sometimes translate it is for myself, "The Lord is my shepherd. I wonder how this will turn out better than I currently assume." And it was literally like my brain came back online, was able to think creatively. And I realized my wife was not that far from the airport on her way home, having dropped me. "Would you please come back? I need your credit card. Use mine for the next 2 weeks." Of course, I had my passport. I wouldn't have been going to India at all. And within about 5 or 10 minutes, I'd solved it. Well, there was a time where that would have absolutely paralyzed me. And I really don't know what I would have done at past points of my life.
How have you personally found solitude and silence helpful? Because you write, in fact, you include parts of the medieval mystics, don't you? And you find that, and I'm all for those too. I think they're great. How do you find that helpful, that tradition helpful?
Here's the thing I've learned. Anxiety is really noisy, and it's really insistent, and it really demands, but it doesn't have much endurance. If you sit with it for a little while, 5, 10, 15 minutes, maybe a little longer, and you don't wrestle with it, you don't fight with it, you don't argue with it, you don't engage it, but you let it be, it's surprising to me how often it runs out of gas. It's my continuing to wrestle with it that keeps it alive, dynamic in my body and in my thinking and in my emotions. So practices like solitude and silence, especially extended periods of solitude and silence, have often been the moments where I find myself literally anxiety-free. And most of that is not a magic trick. Most of that is just, I've settled into the presence of a Prince of Peace. Well, it's no surprise that I'm experiencing a sense of peace in my thinking, in my emotions, in my physical being. So that has been the connection for me in that practice.
Yes. How does Jesus embody peace? And how have you personally, if I may ask you, how have you personally experienced the peace of Christ in your life?
Well, I think just reading the story of Jesus, he comes into a pretty tumultuous time in history. Roman Empire, the Jewish people subject to their rule over them. Lots of turmoil, lots of different opinions about how to proceed in relating to Rome. Jesus comes and he literally embodies peace. You can see when he's talking to, let's say, someone profoundly conflicted, demon-possessed, he brings literal peace into their experience that nobody else could give them. He comes to someone unwell physically, and he brings literal shalom to their bodies in the form of healing. You get the sense when he's with someone who is frantically anxious, it is his presence that quiets them. So I like to say that, you know, when Jesus says, "My peace I give you, not as the world gives, I give to you," he's sort of, I think, saying something like, the best the world can offer is some form of removing the conflicts and removing the troubles and putting you in some kind of bubble where no bad things are happening to you. Jesus' peace is literally his own person, that he is the ultimate non-anxious presence. I think we all know what it feels like to be with a person who is a peaceful presence and the impact it has on us. Well, Jesus, nobody is better than Jesus is at that reality.
Yes, and I guess in his human nature, he must have felt anxious.
Of course. I'm certain he did. I'm certain. And yes. Yet he had learned to practice the presence of his own Father, the God of peace. And somehow that was shaping his life over time.
Yes, indeed. What does the Lord Jesus have to say about worry and anxiety?
I love his sermon, you know, in Matthew. I love when he says, don't worry, which at times past, I sort of, unfortunately, this isn't the fault of Jesus, it's my own, but I imagined him sort of shaking his finger and furrowing his brow and telling me to knock it off. Quit all that worrying. But the more I read that text as I was writing this book, the more I felt a sense of Jesus just saying, you know, you don't have to. I mean, is it helping? I mean, how's it working for you? Is it improving anything for you? And then he just gets so simple. As you and I are talking, I'm looking out my window at some bird feeders in our backyard. He says, look at the birds. A few days ago, maybe now it's been a week and a half, we had storms here in California that dropped about a third of our annual rain in 2 days.
Wow.
And I was on a radio interview during that. And literally during that deluge, I look out and there are birds just having breakfast without apparently a care in the world. So I'm not kidding when I say I think Jesus recommending bird watching has been one of the most wonderful therapies for me to learn peace. You know, his point is, look how irresponsible those birds are. I mean, they are not planting anything or harvest anything or storing it. They're not planning ahead at all. And they seem to be cared for quite well. I think you can count on your Father doing that for you, perhaps even better. And I love that sense of remember how well you are cared for when you are feeling such care.
Yes, I have similar love of birds, and we have plenty of them around our house. We live by the sea, and I, for one, am always feeding them one thing or the other. Generally the leftovers, they take to that quite kindly. And there we are, we're providing for the birds, we look after them. They hang around, that's all good. Particularly the blackbirds. Watching blackbirds gathering worms and food for their young is just fascinating. I watch them. They're very, very hardworking creatures. They really are. Now, you write about inhaling grace. Now, I love that. How do we inhale grace?
I like that as a metaphor. I think in my own experience of the Christian life, grace sometimes sort of felt like a starting line. Like, this was the door that got you into this life, kind of an image. Which then begged the question, how does grace relate to my life in the second day or the third day? Or over the span of my life. And so inhaling grace is a way of sort of saying every moment, every step, or literally here, every breath, I am taking in the generosity of God. I am acknowledging the presence of God. And so sometimes I will quite literally sit in a comfortable chair, even just for 5 minutes in the middle of, like today, a busy day, a full day, and I will just breathe. And I will imagine that what I am doing is taking in the very presence of God with me, that perhaps as I'm exhaling, anxiety is going out with the breath, or some other dynamics that I would rather not be at home inside of me. I've sort of sometimes said in another way of understanding that metaphor, that I inhale grace and then I exhale gratitude. That gratitude is that giving out or responding or returning to God that goodness and generosity he has given me. I like that image of breath because, you know, you can't go very long without breathing, and you can go even less long without grace.
How does what you call scrupulosity block the flow of grace? Scrupulosity.
Yeah. Scrupulosity is that sort of concern about doing everything just right. For me, it's sometimes a kind of religious OCD. It's being so focused on things I'm doing and doing them right that I hardly remember that I'm doing them in the presence of God and for the sake of God. So it's a kind of concern about doing practices or being morally well that doesn't have much of a sense of God with us. And anytime you're engaged in something you thought was religious or faith-oriented, but God's not much in the picture, you're likely going to find anxiety somewhere nearby. Because again, my concern about doing everything right is going to be huge, and my sense of God's generous, merciful, gracious presence with me doing it is going to be thin, and therefore anxiety is going to be there.
Here's a question for you, Alan. In this anxious age, how can we all learn to disengage from our smartphones? Surely the cause of a great deal of anxiety.
I think so. I call these things, one of my names for it is they're virtual omnipresence devices.
Yeah, sure.
I can feel like I am everywhere. I can feel like I know everything. I certainly can know about more things that I can do anything about. And so I have found, for example, I used to use my smartphone as my alarm. Therefore, the first thing in the morning I'd pick up was my phone. And then, of course, I'd just check email real quick, or I'd just look at social media real quick, and something in me would just get revving. I'd see an email that needed attention, right? Or I'd see a post that I really vehemently disagreed with, or whatever it was that stirred me up. So I've taken to leaving my phone downstairs in our home in my office. It charges there. It gets a nap just like I do. And I don't touch it until I've enjoyed my morning, in my case, morning coffee. I've enjoyed reading something in scripture. I've enjoyed being with God. Perhaps I've written a bit in my journal. And sometimes even do a little bit of writing, which takes a lot of focus. And then I will pick up my phone and I will look at what's there. And I find when I do that, the phone's no longer my default. I don't, I can give myself 5 or 10 minutes of nothing to do that doesn't involve my phone. And that's good for my soul.
Yes, I wish I was so disciplined. I will try your method and see if it, I'm a 6 o'clock alarm goes off. Quick, let's have a look at the emails. Oh, we'll just deal with those before we get breakfast. And before I know
I
it, I've
totally
got an avalanche of business.
I totally get that.
Yeah, staying off Twitter. That's my thing. That's what fuels me. I try and engage as little with it as possible. Okay. Lots and lots of other stuff. We've got about 10 minutes left. I've got to ask you about performance anxiety. Now, you're a speaker. You travel all over the world. You do lots and lots of radio interviews. What about performance anxiety? Now, how have you personally often wrestled with that over the years?
Yes. Well, so one, I've wrestled with it in the sense that it's been with me all along. I've been in pastoral ministry, so preaching was a part of my role. I've now been in more so an itinerant kind of role, so now public speaking or conference speaking. Part of it has been redefining what that feeling is. Imagining that the feeling is a sign that I'm going to fail doesn't help me very much. Interpreting it instead as a feeling that says, this matters to me. And maybe it's a sign that I'm about to do something really good and really important. Another thing I would say is that one of my counselors liked to say that anxiety is just energy, but you're sort of pointing it in the wrong direction. You could point that in a different direction. Another thing, and this all is related to performance anxiety, but one of the other things one of my counselors would say to me is, you're going to have to learn to just take your anxiety with you. Now, you might want it in the back seat and not at the steering wheel, but you're going to have to just take it with you, because if you're waiting for it to not be in the car with you, you might wait a long time. So move along, bring it with you. Remember that it reminds you what you care about, and then just step in. The other thing now, being in my 60s and having done this long enough, is I can now rehearse how many times I have felt frantically anxious, and then I stood up and I shared something really helpful for people. There's a pretty good chance that's going to happen next time too.
Yeah, what makes you anxious? Say, if you before a speaking engagement or a preach, what are some of the things that make you anxious?
Yeah, well, I would say they're almost all under the category of focusing on me. Will I say something good? Will they like me? Will I have creative ideas? Will I lose my place? It's me, 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 me. So part of the freedom of anxiety is not being as me focused and remembering, oh my goodness, I get to bless this group of people. Oh, and oh my goodness, God is so kind to want to say a few things through me. I just happen to be the one here today. The less it's about me and the more it's about those I'm serving and the one I'm serving, I find that very quickly my anxiety reduces. But as long as I'm worried if they'll like me or worried if I'll perform well, then that me focus kind of keeps anxiety alive.
Yes, I find it's strange with me because I don't tend to get anxious or even particularly nervous before preaching, but I still get a bit anxious before doing a podcast interview. It's weird. I'm only speaking to one person on a podcast or on a radio station, but I can speak to 300, 400 people, no problem at all. It's weird.
It is funny. I think all of us have different, and again, maybe part of that, what you just shared is, again, you know, what does all this mean? For me in preaching, like you know, I'm not just face to face with a single person or a few people. I'm sort of seeing this sea of people, and somehow that's different for me.
Yeah, it relaxes me actually. I love it. It's because it's sort of more interactive. I think part of the problem with radio for me over the years is that you just stuck away on your own. It's like there's no interaction. Well, there is interaction between you and I, but on an ordinary radio shift, you're in a room shut on your own. And there's nobody in front of you. You could be talking to 250,000 people, but you can't see any of them. You know. I used to find that.
I resonate with that. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. Final question, I think, Alan. We could talk on and on about this. How can we practice God's presence on a daily basis?
Yes. So, you know, I used to think about that practice and imagine it meant I was going to have God thoughts every minute of my day. I'm thinking about God, thinking about God, thinking about God. The more I lean into this, the more it's a sense almost like a two-level living. Like I'm thinking about things, you and I are talking. In a minute, I'll be talking to another individual. Later, I'm going to be doing a few tasks. Those will require my attention, but I can do them with an underlying sense that, oh my goodness, God is graciously with me. God is bringing inspiration. God is guiding. God is loving me as I get a chance to perhaps express love to someone I'm coaching, let's say. And so, but the practice part, often Dallas Willard talked about spiritual practices as something you do off the spot so that you can be the kind of person you want to be on the spot. So if I'd like to be the kind of person who remembers God's with me no matter what I'm doing, part of that involves practicing that God's with me when I'm alone. And so many of the spiritual disciplines help us remember God's with us. There's a way to read scripture that helps you do that. There's a way I will sometimes rehearse my whole day, and it'll be a way of remembering each of those moments God is going to be with me. And then I get there and I remember that God is with me. So that's the practice part of it, I think.
Oh, Alan, thank you so much. The book from IVP America, which is called The Non-Anxious Life, Experiencing the Peace of God's Presence, I found it very helpful. I'm going to go away and try and put into practice some of the things Alan said, including dealing with my phone. And, Alan, thank you so much, Alan Fadling. And thanks to our creative team at Liquid Edge who sponsor our podcast and who take care of things behind the scenes. Alan, bless you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for listening to the God Story Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a review and make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next one. Links to the books and topics mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes, and you can discover bonus episodes on our Patreon page. As always, you can get in touch via our website, godstorypodcast.com. That's godstorypodcast.com.